Hello and welcome to the PCJ Media Archives. I'm Keith Parent. If I was to say to you the Group of Five international broadcasters, what would come to mind? Any ideas? Well, the Group of Five was known for Radio Canada International, Radio Nederland Wereldomroep, Swiss Radio International, Radio Australia, and Radio Sweden. These days, the group should be known as the Group of Three, as two of those broadcasters no longer exist. They are Swiss Radio International, that went off the air a few years ago, and then on October 30th, Radio Sweden, in Stockholm, signed off their shortwave and medium-wave transmitters.
This is Radio Sweden.
Sveriges Radio utlandsprogrammet.
This is Radio Sweden, Stockholm. Starting off with a bulletin of news, followed by our weekday current affairs magazine, Panorama, in which we look at the scene here in Sweden. And then lastly, some more music from Sweden. Here first then is the news.
Sveriges Radio utlandsprogrammet. Radio Sweden International.
Ni lyssnar till Sveriges Radio utlandsprogrammet. Här kommer nu ett halvtimmesprogram på svenska.
We now present the final program from Radio Sweden International's English language service for its listeners on shortwave and medium wave.
Welcome to Radio Sweden at the weekend. Today with a shorter than normal review of the top stories in Sweden of the week gone by. Because this weekend we also mark the end of Radio Sweden's shortwave broadcasts. Coming up in our weekly review, the three red-green opposition parties announced that they will end the close cooperation that was forged ahead of the elections.
Especially the social democratic voter wasn't so prepared for this sort of tight cooperation with the former Communist Party and the Greens.
We'll also give you a taste of, among others, this week's political scandal and the proposed changes to the sex crime laws. And then, in the second part of the program, we'll look back at 7 decades of Radio Sweden.
Hello, hello. This is Stockholm, Sweden. Good evening, everybody.
Hello, America. Hello, America. This is Sweden calling. Sweden calling.
We interview Radio Sweden's channel manager, who explains the reason for these changes, and we'll have a look at what the future holds for us in the online world. All that in this very last shortwave program from Radio Sweden. In Broadcasting House in Stockholm, I'm Ulla Engberg, and you are welcome to the show. We'll start off, like so many weekends before, with a review of the top stories in Sweden of the past week. On Monday, the three red-green opposition parties presented their shadow budget, proposing more teachers in schools, lower tax on pensioners, and also lowering the employment fee for those who hire young people. They also wanted to save money on defence. As the shadow budget was presented, there was speculation in the media that it might be the last joint budget for the three parties, which formed a coalition ahead of the elections. And sure enough, on Tuesday, the announcement came from the Social Democrat leader Mona Sahlin that there will be a break to the close cooperation between the parties. Although the Social Democrats, the Greens and the Left Party will continue to meet up every week, this certainly means that the political landscape of Sweden has changed. Now the Red-Green parties are free to cooperate with the government on particular issues, which means the centre-right government more easily can avoid leaning on the support of the anti-immigrant Sweden Democrats. Tuesday's announcement was greeted with applause from many of the Social Democrat grassroots. To find out more, Radio Sweden's Lukas Christodoulou decided to call up Robert Sundberg, an editorial writer from the Social Democrat paper Dala Demokraten in the west of the country. In the interview, Sundberg uses the term bourgeoisie to describe the centre-right bloc, which is in power today. This comes from the rough translation of the Swedish term borgerliga, which is often used for the four non-socialist parties. Lukas began by asking how Sundberg reacted when he heard that the Red-Greens were splitting or taking a break.
It was sort of expected because the cooperation was mainly because to meet the voters in the election. And when the Green-Red parties didn't win the election, then the cooperation was about to go to an end.
So you don't think there's any sort of scope to do any similar work in opposition?
They will have a little bit of cooperation in the parliament, but mainly it's shut down for now at least. The red and the green parties haven't had the kind of history of working together as the bourgeoisie parties have had earlier. It has often been the Social Democratic Party going to election and in order of forming a government with only the Labour Party in it. So this was a new thing, and especially the Social Democratic voter wasn't so prepared for this sort of tight cooperation with the former Communist Party and the Greens.
You're not sure that Social Democrat voters who are used to the Social Democrats being able to govern alone are ready for this sort of coalition where they form an actual bloc?
Yes, because the Social Democratic Party has been a very large party with 40-45%, and in it it has a very different kind of voters and people who are workers and in the north of the country, in mines, steel workers and so on. They have a sort of feel comfortable with the environmental party, the Green Party. And some people on the right wing of the Social Democrats, they don't feel comfortable with the Vänsterpartiet, the left party, former Communist Party.
But the situation now is that the Social Democrats, if they're going to be only on 30%, they can't really try to form a government on their own anymore, can they?
Yes, that is a sort of a dilemma for the party. In local election, they still have 33-34%, but in the on the parliament level, it's a weaker party, and they have a dilemma how to get in office. But also the bourgeoisie parties, they haven't a majority. They are dependent on the parties to the left or on the new Sverigedemokraterna, the new party that came into the parliament.
Robert Sundberg, editorial writer at the Social Democrat paper Dala Demokraten, interviewed by Radio Sweden's Lukas Christodoulou. And from there we go over to a string of shorter news stories delivered by Brett Ascarelli at the Radio Sweden news desk.
A government-appointed commission has presented proposals for new sex crime laws. The investigators have been looking at the effects of the most recent legal reforms carried out some 5 years ago. They say a new classification of sexual assault is needed for cases when an assailant has non-consensual sex with a victim, whether or not there has been force or exploitation involved. The crime would result in 4 years imprisonment. Prime Minister Frederick Reinfeldt and opposition leader Mona Sahlin say they have come closer to a broad agreement on the Swedish troops in Afghanistan after talks held on Tuesday. Reinfeldt told the news agency TT that setting a clear purpose for the Afghanistan force, including talking about dates, was a good idea. Before the elections, he was much more critical of the Red-Green proposal to start pulling out of Afghanistan next year and to finalize the withdrawal in 2013. Meanwhile, Sahlin and the Social Democrats have begun stressing the importance of taking into account the ability of Afghan forces to take over the security in their own country. The Swedish government's proposal on the Afghanistan force will be put before the parliament on the 4th of November. The trial of two men accused of planning to commit terrorist attacks in Somalia opened in Gothenburg on Thursday. The prosecution says that the two men, aged 22 and 26, traveled to Somalia and were trained to be suicide bombers by the Islamic armed group Al-Shabaab. The trial, which will last 2 weeks, is based on a surveillance operation by the Swedish Police Security Service, including telephone taps and bugs. The evidence includes the contents of two computers confiscated from one of the defendants. Films on the computers allegedly encouraged suicide bombings and other violent acts, and some of them were marked with Al-Shabaab emblems. Defense lawyer Thomas Olsen says that taking sides in a civil war in another part of the world is not a crime, and that Swedish anti-terrorism laws cannot be applied to this case.
This week also contained a political scandal to dominate the front pages. The party secretary of the Moderates, Sofia Arkelsten, came in for criticism as it turned out that she had gone for a trip to France, paid for by the oil company Shell. Radio Sweden's Tom Sullivan reports on how this could damage the credibility of the Prime Minister.
Right after last month's general election, the victorious Moderate Party was basking in the glory of one of its best election results in recent history. Then it was time for some changes at the top. Per Schlingmann, the party secretary and a key architect of the successful campaign, was promoted to work as the Prime Minister's top spin doctor. And a young member of parliament, Sofia Arkelsten, took his place as party secretary. She was little known apart from her work as the party's environmental spokesperson, but her profile shot up over the last couple of days, however, when it came to light that she had been on a trip to France in 2008, paid for by the oil company Shell. In Sweden, this kind of potential conflict of interest is taken very seriously. A political scandal can erupt here over no more than a politician's failure to pay their TV licence fee. Asked by Swedish Radio News how the scandal will affect the credibility of his party, Prime Minister Fredrik Reinfeldt was cagey.
Ja, det är för tidigt att säga. Det är viktigt att visa att vi har ett förtroende för Sofia Arkelsten.
It's too early to say, he says, adding that it's important to show that Sofia Arkelsten has our trust. He also says that she has done a good job describing the change in her role that has happened since she became party secretary compared to when she was a member of parliament. Reinfeldt has come out against the idea that politicians should refuse to go on trips paid for by private companies or organisations. In that case, a lot of our contacts would be cut off, he said.
Mycket av kontakterna kommer att stängas ner.
Tabloid newspaper Aftonbladet has now published details of other trips that the Moderate Party secretary took that were paid for by private organisations. A study trip in 2008 to a nuclear power station in Finland was paid for by the Forum for Energy. And a trip to Tanzania in 2007 was paid for by the RFSU, the Swedish Association for Sexual Education. Sofia Arkelsten herself told Swedish Radio News that she saw nothing odd in an organiser paying her costs to take part in a seminar, and that there was no risk that she had been influenced in any way.
Alltså, jag har inte påverkats av detta, men bara det...
I've not been affected by it, she said, adding that she regretted if it seemed as though she had let herself be influenced. The National Anti-Corruption Unit is currently looking into the circumstances around the Shell trip 2 years ago.
Radio Sweden's Tom Sullivan reporting there. And with that, we end our weekly review and move on to a look much further back in history. So this weekend is the last time Radio Sweden will be heard on shortwave. From Sunday onwards, we'll be available nationally within Sweden on FM, and listeners abroad will only be able to hear us over the internet, as well as some satellite relays. We'll treat you to a bit of retrospective of Radio Sweden's 7 decades on air in a little bit, but first an interview with the channel manager for, among other services, Radio Sweden, to find out what the reasoning is behind the closure of our short and medium wave services. Here's Chris Boswell, who himself started listening to Radio Sweden via medium wave in the early 90s, speaking to channel manager Elle-Kari Höjeberg.
We have been evaluating the impact today of short and medium wave and compared that with the costs of keeping that service open. And we come to the conclusion that short and medium wave, although it has over the years been a very important platform for distribution for the Swedish radio, no longer is that important. At the same time, we have to look at our costs all the time and make a balance between the cost and the effect on the distribution. And the conclusion is short and medium wave is no longer a very efficient way of distributing our material. There are other ways of doing it that we think are more efficient and cost-worthy.
How important has the short and medium wave broadcast, how important have they been for Swedish radio through the years, would you say?
I think that short and medium wave, especially during the Cold War, was very important. It was a means for the Swedish government, because in those days it was part of the Foreign Office, to give another window of information to people living in countries where there was less access to free media, for example. It was also very important for sailors and other people who were working abroad, missionaries, etc. They could get news about Sweden in Swedish through this. However, the world has changed, and I think that when we close it down now, it's about time all the Scandinavian broadcasters, apart from ourselves, Finland, Denmark, and Norway, no longer distribute their material in this way. We are the last country to go. And so I think it's a good time to stop.
Is there no sort of emotional band to it, though? I mean, a lot of people have this warm feeling when you think about short and medium wave, especially those of us that started listening to Radio Sweden via medium wave in the evenings in the UK. Does it tug on your heartstrings that you have to make this decision?
Yes. I mean, I have warm feelings for the short and medium wave myself. When I was a freelance and working, traveling in Latin America, for example, or in Africa many years ago, I was hanging out the windows, putting out antennas, trying in all ways to get the best reception possible, which wasn't always very easy. It was quite fun. And when you at last managed to get onto the Swedish news, for example, and hear something about what was happening, of course, that was a great difference. In those days, the only way to find out whether something had happened in Sweden, I mean, you didn't call home to say, did anything happen, was to go to the embassy, for example, where you had 1 week old newspapers. Or you'd have to wait for the mail coming to a postrestante somewhere in La Paz or something like that. The radio was immediate. Today, internet has replaced all of this, and you can easily, in most places, access and find out what happened. You can listen to the news of this morning on the radio through the internet. You can listen to your favorite program. You can also download them as podcast. Mm.
And what do you say to those? We do have listeners in countries that don't yet have wide broadband access, or they may live in a country whose governments are rather keen on censoring the internet. It's easier to censor the net than it is to censor a shortwave broadcast. What do you say to them?
When it comes to countries where you still have a lot of censorship, yes, I admit that's it's a problem for them when they can't access to the internet and get news, for example, about Sweden. On the other hand, that today is not our main mission with the way we distribute news. In English, this is. I mean, there's not that many Swedish-speaking people maybe in China that would do it that way, for example. It's not the main course for us to do that. And I think and I hope that there are still other bigger broadcasters who continue this survey for a little while until there are ways of getting through the information over the internet or by other means of distribution. I think for the people who haven't got broad access to the broadband or who don't know how to operate it or who find short and medium wave a convenient way of doing, we can just say, yes, it would have been nice maybe to go on, but costs are costs. And we can't defend having costs for a very, very small audience on the short and medium wave that is also getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
And that was Swedish Radio's Elle-Kari Höjeberg speaking to Chris Boswell there. Now, I've been looking forward to this. A look at the Radio Sweden history and origin and what we sounded like in the heydays of shortwave broadcasts. Our own George Wood, who's worked at Radio Sweden since 1975, put together the following 10-minute tour of the past.
Like many similar stations, our story began as World War II approached. In 1938, Swedish Radio turned on a shortwave transmitter to carry programs in Swedish to the world, mostly to maintain contact with Swedes abroad as the international situation worsened. The following year, programs were added in German and English.
Hello, hello. This is Stockholm, Sweden. Good evening, everybody. Every Wednesday and Saturday night, we are going to arrange a special shortwave program as an experiment, primarily for Swedes in foreign countries. Certain parts of the ordinary program shall be composed into a one-hour transmission. The time for this broadcast is 2 o'clock Swedish time, that is 1 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time, the nights between Wednesday and Thursday, and Saturday and Sunday.
Soon afterwards, Radio Sweden was also on the air to North America.
Hello, America. Hello, America. This is Sweden calling. Sweden calling.
Sweden calls America. This week, Sweden calls all housewives. In a previous program in this series, we brought you the voice of Mr. Yuris, Sweden's Minister of Supplies, who told you something about Sweden's supplies and the extent of rationing. And so today we thought you might be interested in having a practical demonstration of what the average Swedish housewife can buy in the way of foodstuff.
That story was about the effects of wartime rationing on households here. And over the years we've tried to cover Sweden for people out in the world. We talked to Dag Hammarskjöld when he was appointed Secretary General of the United Nations in 1953.
Mr. Hammarskjöld, was this appointment as General Secretary of the United Nations a surprise to you?
Yes, indeed. It was a complete surprise. I hadn't heard anything about it for Tuesday night.
In 1969, Prime Minister Olof Palme explained Swedish neutrality for our listeners.
Neutrality doesn't condemn us to be silent. It rather puts an obligation on us to defend the rights of small nations to live. And therefore, when we have said something in international questions, it is very often just concerned the rights of small nations. Therefore, we protested very strongly against the invasion of the Soviet Union in Czechoslovakia. And therefore, we have protested now recently against the American invasion in Cambodia.
There were tragedies like Palme's murder in 1986.
Sveriges statsminister Olof Palme är död. Han sköts ikväll i centrala Stockholm.
You are tuned to Radio Sweden International, broadcasting from Stockholm. Our regular program schedule for broadcast on this frequency at this time is not coming to you because of the assassination Friday night in Stockholm of the Swedish Prime Minister Olof Palme.
The 2004 Asian tsunami killed hundreds of thousands of people in Asia, of course, but it was also the worst disaster ever affecting Swedes.
Around 20,000 Swedes were holidaying in the region when the killer wave struck, the majority of them in Thailand. More than 1,500 Swedes were injured, and today, 543 are listed as dead or missing.
It's a picture of lots of devastation, lots of people are killed, and lots of uncertainty.
The island is destroyed. It was hit by two waves, first on one side.
The water got away from the shore, revealing the reef.
But there's been good news over the years as well, like our annual coverage of the Nobel Prizes.
Welcome to a special Nobel edition from Radio Sweden. As today's Nobel Day, we're devoting the broadcast to laureates past, laureates present, science, peace and the future.
Probably the most popular Radio Sweden program over the years was the Saturday Show. It was created by Roger Wallace and Kim Lochran in 1967, the period when pirate radio was breaking down the doors of stodgy European music radio.
The Maharishi is speaking now.
The highest form of meditation, many great chuckles with the Saturday Show.
I must...
And now we're going over to the Army Mess to meet Major General Funny Face Sidney Coulson, who has some tips for tourists, military tourists, that is.
Well, you chaps, here are a few basic tips when visiting a country like Sweden.
Taking advantage of what was then a very strong medium-wave transmitter that easily reached Britain, the full program ran for 90 minutes a week, filled with the latest from a very vital Swedish rock and pop scene, and some sometimes very controversial political sketches.
Some people hate Radio Sweden so intensely that they never miss a single program.
Our other most famous program, if I may say so, was Sweden Calling DXers, which launched in 1948 as a guide for DXers, hobbyists who listen to shortwave radio.
This is the Swedish Broadcasting Service calling DXers of the world. To begin this first weekly survey, here are two advancers about scheduled DX programs to be broadcast tomorrow, Sunday, February 29th, 1948. The first from the Voice of the Andes.
That was a reenactment of the first edition of Sweden Calling DXers. The program was started by Arne Skoog as a means of helping our listeners enjoy their hobby more, which in the long run meant they might listen to us more. I took over from Arne when the program celebrated its 30th anniversary in 1978. 20 years later, on its 50th birthday, I interviewed Arne about his creation.
Well, my idea was to do something for those who really listen to the shortwave. You see, most of the programs produced and broadcast are on the purpose of the broadcaster, not of the listener.
Most of the material in Sweden Calling DXers was directly contributed by mail from the program's listeners, which made it a very early example of interactivity, maybe even social media, as the printed scripts were mailed as a newsletter to everyone who contributed. Sweden Calling DXers was a pioneer in other ways. The newsletters were uploaded to computer bulletin boards and sent off through ham radio packet radio networks. And in September 1994, it became the first radio program from Sweden, and the first in English from Europe, to be available as an audio file on the Internet. In fact, in the very program where we announced this, we also predicted that one day it would be possible to listen to radio programs live over the Internet.
Welcome to Radio Sweden's live election night coverage, and hello again to those of you listening to us over the internet at radiosweden.org.
So on Monday, we'll be FM, satellite, and internet only. But we hope you can join us then for a special conversation with our colleagues from Swedish Radio's digital media department, looking at what the future holds for us in the online world, including our brand new website, which is about to launch.
And that brings us to the end of another program in our Sweden Calls America series. We're nearing the end of this series. So long again from Sweden.
A real nostalgia trip there, put together by George Wood. And he mentioned Monday's program when he'll be speaking to Swedish Radio's digital department with a look at what the future holds for us in the online world. Tell you what, why don't we listen to a sneak preview of that conversation already now? Here's George Wood talking to Katarina Cooper, project manager for Swedish Radio's mobile services, and Daniel Bo, also in the mobile services, but in charge of the online content development as well, and Robert Hendrickson, who has been specifically working with us at Radio Sweden on the upcoming launch of our brand new website. George started by asking the guests how fast new media has been growing here at Swedish Radio and how important have online services become. Katarina Cooper was first to hit the mic.
Well, digital media, or it was called new media when it started in 1995, so that was not that long ago, only 15 years, and it's grown a lot. And we need to be prepared and ready for the audience and be where they are. So we need to do this now.
New media services are extremely important for how we can communicate with our audience. And of course, to let them hear and read what we do in different ways. And for instance, I mean, internet is sort of the best thing that could ever happen to radio. Because 15 years ago, 10 years ago, when you aired a show, then it was gone. You couldn't listen to it again if we wouldn't make a rerun of it. But now you can listen to shows, which we air, whenever you want to, wherever you want to. And I mean, that's a big difference for us as a broadcaster. And of course, a great difference and a fabulous thing for the audience as well.
Now, very soon, we're launching a revamp of our website in connection with the changes to our schedule and leaving shortwave. Robert, you've been our go-to person on the news site, you might say. How is it going to differ from what we've had before?
Oh, in a lot of ways. First, it will be adapted in what it looks like and have the same features as the rest of our site, sverigesradio.se. It will have better structure. It'll be easier to present news, for instance, in a better way with related articles, pictures, etc., within the main story, sort of news packages. And it should be easier to navigate within each of SR International's sites.
I think we should point out, this is something you've told us now, that when the thing launches, we expect there's going to be bugs. There's things that we're going to fix as we go.
Yeah, it's unavoidable.
The cool thing is with the internet is, of course, that it differs from a newspaper and from a book, of course. And the point is that you can make it better all the time. And things happen with the website when the audience reacts on it. So it's natural to make things better as we go along.
Daniel Bo, Katarina Cooper and Robert Henriksson of Swedish Radio's Digital Media Department, talking to Radio Sweden's George Wood there. And the whole conversation you'll be able to hear in our Monday program and on the web at radiosweden.org. So we're nearing the end of today's program, the end of this week, and the end of our shortwave broadcasts. Today we brought you a shortened weekly review and a longer theme looking back at the history of 72 years of Radio Sweden. Time has come to say hej då and goodbye from me, Ulla Engberg, and from us at Radio Sweden. And do join us again in our new costume next week, online, via satellite or on FM here in Sweden. Bye for now.
Sveriges Radio, Stockholm.
If you would like to hear more of these archive programs, please contact us. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com. That's pcjmedia@gmail.com. And do check out the rest of the archives at www.pcjmedia.com.